Have you ever thought about doing something that you kind of knew was a bad idea? And you know, and you knew it was a bad idea, and the reason it's a bad idea could be any number of reasons. It could be a kind of a, you know, the chances of success are like super slim, but I think I might go for it anyway. You know, or maybe, you know, maybe there's a big payoff at the end, but if it doesn't come through, it's going to be really bad. I've lived a lot of my life on that one. Oops, didn't work out. Didn't expect that. Because my ideas are always going to work, right? No, they don't. But what's funny is that, you know, we can kind of weigh all this evidence about, you know, why it's a bad idea. And, you know, if it was someone else doing it, you'd be yelling, stop. But it's you, and you're not like that, right? Your ideas are better. I think my ideas are better, right? And the thing is that we can look at all this evidence that it's not going to work out, or at least the chances of it working out are so low, or the cost of it failing is so high that maybe we shouldn't do it, but we're like, you know, I'm going to try anyway, right? I'm my own person. I make my own decisions. I mean, this is my life, right? Who's going to tell me what my choices should be, that what I do with my life is no one else's concern? But then the question becomes is that, do my bad decisions only affect my life? Or do the decisions I make that turn out to be bad decisions affect other people in my life? I mean, have you ever made a decision that impacted someone else's life, that cost someone else something, that created a mess that someone else had to clean up? But it seemed like a good idea at the time. But the reality is that we kind of knew that those issues were out there, that those were a problem. Because I think there's a reality, right, is that although we have this sense that our decisions are our own, and our decisions are absolutely our own, but the outcomes of these decisions are not entirely our own. It would be a very rare situation for you or me to make a decision that doesn't affect the other people in our lives. You know, certainly it affects your spouse. You know, if your children are still living at home, it affects your children. It can affect other people you work with. Yet despite kind of all this evidence and the situation being so clear that it could go wrong, we still make those decisions. And the first time it happens, you learn from it 100%, right? The first time you make that bad decision that has this devastating blowback, you're never going to do that again until the next time, right? Because this time will be different. Right, and it's a reality that we all struggle with, right? There's this reality that there's something that causes us to make decisions that may not be as healthy as they should be, right? So as we continue our series that we started last week of Bring Your Baggage, right, the reality is that we all carry baggage, right? We all carry hurts and scars and pain that begin to shape our personalities, but they also begin to shape our decision-making. And very often, it's those experiences and that pain and that baggage that drives us to make decisions that are not necessarily good decisions. That we're trying to overcome something, we're trying to prove something, we're trying to punch through something, we're trying to show somebody that they're wrong about us. And that baggage kind of builds up. And we all carry baggage, and that baggage impacts all aspects of our lives. And today, what I want to look at specifically is how that baggage leads us to make bad decisions, particularly decisions that harms other people, and kind of what can we do to kind of begin to kind of mitigate that a bit. I mean, we're never going to make perfect decisions, but I think there are some fundamental things that we can do that would cause us to slow down and maybe create a little less havoc in our wake. That would be a really good goal, wouldn't it? To create just a little bit less of a mess around us as we travel. So what I want to talk about today is an Old Testament character, or I should say an Old Testament person, that you almost definitely have heard of. His name is Samson. Now, what is Samson famous for? This chick he was seeing, right? Right? What was her name? Delilah, you all know this. Tom Jones knows it, right? Right? He named a song for it. We're actually not going to talk about Delilah today. We'll talk about Delilah next week. Because it turns out that Samson was making bad decisions long before he met Delilah. Now, Samson's kind of a really interesting person because Samson is what's called a judge, right? And we've talked about judges for the past 5 weeks, I think. Remember, the period of the judges is this kind of very chaotic time in the history of the Hebrews, right? The history of the nation we now know as Israel, right? That it was a time where there was no clear leader, right? So they're dealing with turmoil all the time. They're often dealing with conflict from foreign nations. And so what you have is a situation where you're in the ancient world, right, which is very brutal. The ancient world is incredibly brutal. You know, we're talking, you know, more than 3,000 years ago, right, more than 1,000 years before Jesus. And what you have is a situation where there are constant attacks and struggles going on. And the judges would periodically rise up and deal with those. Like last week we met Gideon, right? Gideon was one of the judges. And Gideon's role was that there was a particular country that kept attacking the Midianites. And Gideon's role was to actually repel the Midianites. In the case of Samson, things are a little bit different. In the case of Samson, his nation has already been conquered. It's been conquered by these Philistines. So that basically, Samson and his people are subjugated to the Philistines at this point in time. And what Samson's role is as a judge is to begin to protect his people. He's not really able to repel the Philistines, but he is there to protect them as things kind of come up. Because it's this kind of weird, tense situation that both the Hebrews and the Philistines live in the land. The Philistines are clearly in charge and will use violence to maintain their power. But at the same time, the two nations do seem to mix a little bit. That it's a tense situation, but they are able to kind of, you know, be around one another. But Samson is responsible for protecting his people. Now, as we meet Samson, he's a young man. And we learn a lot about Samson really quickly. And one of the things that we will see almost immediately about Samson is he has a real impulse control problem. Like whatever he decides he wants to do, he does. Right? So basically, we kind of meet him as he's on this walk from his hometown. So he's walking from his hometown to a town called Timnah. Timnah is about 4 miles away. And Timnah is actually a Philistine town. Right? So he's actually... He's kind of, he's kind of walking into, he's kind of going to poke the bear, right? He's going to walk into the town where he's not supposed to be. And he walks in there, and basically it says that Samson went down to Timnah and saw there a young Philistine woman. Now, it appears he doesn't get in any trouble while he's there, but it says, when he returned, he said to his father and mother, I have seen a Philistine woman in Timnah. Now get her for me as my wife. Now, that's not how you're supposed to talk to your parents, of course. Right? So first of all, it shows that he's kind of pushing for just what he wants. But it's interesting too, right, is that his role is to defend his people from the Philistines. Yet he's thinking about marrying a woman who's a Philistine. Now this is going to be loaded with problems, right? What could possibly go wrong? And his parents have the wisdom to see that, right? And his parents basically say, hey, if you want to get married, we'll find you a wife, but does it have to be her? Could it be someone else? And he doesn't listen. They keep pushing back, and he keeps pushing for her. And finally it says, Samson said to his father, get her for me. She's the right one for me. Now, as you hear his passion over this woman, you start to realize, well, maybe he's not being so impulsive. Maybe this is like a Romeo and Juliet thing, right? Like, you know, Capulets, right? Montagues and the Capulets. You remember your Shakespeare? You guys hanging with your Shakespeare? How about the Hatfields and the McCoys? Does that work better? Right? Same situation, right? Is that basically, you know, Samson's part of the Hebrews. She's part of the Philistines, two groups who kind of hate each other. And he's like, you know, I'm not going to let, that cultural norm stop me, right? This is romance. I've got to have this woman. I mean, that's what it seems like, right? That he must be so in love that he's just not going to let anything get in his way. But let's see what happens next. It says, Samson went down to Timnah together with his father and mother. So he takes his parents to go meet her. Then Samson went down and talked with the woman, and he liked her. He had never even spoken to her. So why was he doing all this? Because she's hot. Right? He's doing it entirely based on how she looks. Now, it is kind of interesting. As I was getting ready for this morning, I was doing some research. And it's interesting that just in the past 10 years, the genealogy of the Philistines, as they existed during the time of the Judges, has been established. And I'm not making this up. This is from Smithsonian Magazine. So, and what they found was that the Philistines were known as the sea people. In other words, they kind of came from the sea, and no one really knew where they came from. Well, it turns out that DNA testing shows they came from the area of the Mediterranean, which is currently Greece. So he's Middle Eastern. She's Greece. She's kind of exotic, right? She's kind of hot. She's not like all those other girls. She looks way different. I got to have her, is what it is. Now, what's happening here, right? He didn't even know her. Yet he's about to blow a bunch of stuff up. He's ignoring advice from his parents. It's a situation that's obviously bad. What's going on? Well, I think if we're honest with ourselves, he's employing a decision-making process that many of us have used, and honest, if we're honest with ourselves, occasionally still use. I heard another minister describe his decision process as this. I want it. I deserve it. I can handle it. I want it. I deserve it. I can handle it. He saw her. She's gorgeous. She's exotic. She's different than all the other girls physically. We don't know what she's like, right? I want it. Wow, but does it really have to be her? Well, I'm the great Samson. You know, I work all day for these people. I deserve something special, something, you know, it's kind of out there, something that's kind of beyond the rest, right? You know, I put in all these hours every week, a couple extra drinks at the end of the day is not a big deal. And a couple more. I deserve it. It's a hard day. I need to relax. I deserve it. Had a big win. I want a party. I deserve it. Right? Or I actually spend money I don't actually have because I want that car or that house or those clothes. I deserve it. I want it. I deserve it. But then someone says, but that's going to create problems. I can handle it. I got it. Don't worry about it. I got this. I can handle this. Yeah, for mere mortals, this might be a problem, but I can do it. Right? We all struggle with avoiding that kind of thinking. You know, the beauty of a story like Samson's is that his behavior is so overt, it's easy to see. But the reality is it's a battle that we all have. We may not be consciously thinking that way, but how often do we ignore the advice of other people? People who, you know, that we should trust. I mean, not as strangers or people who don't know us, but people who've been in our family or our friends or people who are just trying to speak the truth to us. And whenever people speak truth to us that we don't like, we always receive it well. Right? Right? We get angry. Right? I deserve this. I've put in a lot. And I know there's, you know, potential problems, but I can handle it. And I think it's kind of interesting for Samson, as he takes this chance, he probably will be okay because he's the greatest warrior of his time. He commonly beats large armies. So he probably will be okay. But does this decision, he's getting married, does this decision just affect his life? Will his parents be okay if this goes wrong? Will this girl be okay if it goes wrong? Will her family be okay if it goes wrong? I mean, we don't know if Samson even considers those issues. We don't know if he's just convinced himself that he can handle the whole thing, if he hasn't thought about it at all, if he just doesn't care. We don't really know. And what's interesting is that Samson, after he kind of makes this initial decision, he begins a process of making kind of worse decisions. And I'll ask the question, how often do we do that sort of thing? That when we do something where we push it to the edge and we make it, we're like, oh, I'm so grateful that I survived. I'll never do that again. Or do we go, I survived that. I can go one step further, right? You know, the infamous that we go out, you know, dinner, have a couple drinks, and we decide to have that third one this time. And we get home, and we're okay. So maybe next time we have a fourth one or a fifth one. And we get home, and we're okay. So I got it. I'm good. You know, or we actually, again, spend money we don't have, and that credit card was coming due, and somehow you squeeze it out, and you were able to pay the bill. But then we continue to buy things we can't afford, or we spend time with people who are not good for us, or take up habits that are not good for us, right? There's this human thing where surviving dangerous situations convinces us that we've got it figured out, and we continue to push things harder and harder and further and further. And that's exactly what Samson does, is that his parents come there, they come, they arrange the marriage. But Samson doesn't want just kind of any old marriage. He's Samson. He needs to have a huge marriage. He wants to have an entourage. But he didn't bring anybody with him. So if he's going to have an entourage, it's got to be Philistines, the people who hate him, who would kill him if they had the chance. So he creates an entourage of 30 Philistine men because they're going to walk behind him during his wedding. But the thing that's important to understand that culturally, when they had weddings, weddings weren't, you know, 15 minutes at the front of the church, hang out downstairs for an hour and head out. Weddings were like a week long. So what was going to happen is that he was going to be eating and drinking for a solid week with 30 Philistine men who hate him in a city filled with Philistines. What could go wrong, right? So of course, the thing to do is just keep his head down, right? Like just, okay, don't do anything that creates trouble, right? Just be friendly to everybody. Don't drink too much. Don't talk too loud. Don't prance around like you're in charge of everything. He's not going to do that. So basically, after they've been kind of there together, they've been drinking for a while, he makes another impulsive decision. Samson says, let me tell you a riddle. If you can give me the answer within the 7 days of the feast, I will give you 30 linen garments and 30 sets of clothes. If you can't tell me the answer, you must give me 30 linen garments and 30 sets of clothes. Now, there's a bunch of important context here that kind of shows how outlandish what he's offering is. Remember that in the ancient world, clothing was expensive. Right? Most people had very utilitarian clothing, you know, things that just got the job done, and just, you know, a couple pieces because it was expensive. So the idea of having dressy clothing would be something kind of most people would never, ever expect. And this would be enormously expensive. The outfit that he's describing would be enormously expensive. Very few people would be able to afford to buy even one of these outfits. Because in that time frame, clothing, kind of like today, clothing was a sign of status. You know, if you get that high-end suit or that very expensive dress, right, there's kind of a status that goes with that. This was especially true for their time. So what he's saying is that I want the clothing of someone who is of high status. And I don't just want one, I want 30 of them. But here's the deal with this bet that he's just made, is that he doesn't have enough money to buy even one outfit. He can't afford this. And the reality is that the guys who bet against him probably don't have enough money to buy even one outfit. But what's the bet, right? And think of the odds or the kind of the out-of-balance nature of this, right? That if Samson wins, each of those 30 guys has to buy just one outfit. If Samson loses, Samson personally has to buy 30 outfits, he does not have the money for one. But what's happening? I want it. I deserve it. I'm Samson. I run this country. I can handle it. Whatever the issue is, I can handle it because I've got the perfect riddle. And the riddle he asks is actually a really good riddle. I won't get into the details of it, but it's a riddle tied to an encounter he has where he has a battle with a lion, right? So he actually defeats the lion. But no one else is around, right? So he actually asked this question that if no one, unless you were there to see it, there's no way you can answer it. And so as soon as he asked the riddle, those 30 Philistines realized that he's kind of taking advantage of them. This isn't a traditional puzzle. It's something that only he knows the answer to. They're not happy about this, right? Because from their attitude, Samson has walked in here, he's taken one of our women, and now he's going to make fools of us by doing this? Now, they would have loved to attack Samson, but they know they cannot win a battle with Samson. So what do? They go to his wife-to-be and basically say that this is your fault. You participated in this marriage. You're doing this to us. Unless you actually get us the answer, we'll kill you. And they mean it. Now look at what Samson has done. Look at the drama that he has created. Right? What should have been a happy party for a week, now his wife-to-be is fearful for her life. And she's crying every day, understandably. And so rather than having this kind of great party, a fun time, he's created all this drama where she's begging him every day, just tell me the answer. Just tell me the answer. And she, the tax she uses, is she says, if I'm going to be your wife, I need to know everything, right? So just tell me the answer. And he keeps resisting. You know, and I just can't think about how many times I've been at a party or a wedding and someone just has kind of blown up things with all this drama that just didn't need to happen. And this is mega drama, right? She is literally crying for her life. And so finally, Samson gives in. He tells her the answer. So to save her own life, she then goes to the 30 men, tells them the answer, and they walk up and tell Samson the answer to his riddle. And just as he thought he had won, he actually had lost. So what is he going to do? He doesn't have the ability to pay for this. He has no solution to paying for this. Oh, he does have one. He's strong enough and a great enough warrior that he can beat anyone. So he basically walks off to a far-off Philistine city, beats up 30 men there, wealthy men there, steals their clothes from them, packs them up, brings them back, and pays off his debt. And then Samson being Samson just disappears. Wedding hasn't even happened yet. You know, the whole party's going on, but the final step hasn't happened yet. And now he's left this poor girl at the altar, all because he had to push for a bit more and a bit more and have a bit more and be considered more important and look a little bit more important. So as he wanders off, what's this girl's family going to do? Because she's now left at the altar. Remember, this is the ancient world, right? Women are considered property. It's just the way it is. Right? And so basically, by her not getting married, she's actually bringing shame onto her family. So the father can't have that. So the father very quickly marries her to someone else. Now, Samson's nowhere to be found. No one knows where he's at. Knows where he is at. But then one day he comes walking into town. He wants to go hang out with his wife. And it's pretty clear what he means by hang out with his wife. And the father's like, her father's like, we didn't know what happened to you. So we married her to somebody else. And Samson's furious. He's absolutely furious. And this next statement from Samson gives us a clear picture of how he sees the world. Samson said to them, "This time I have a right to get even with the Philistines. I will really harm them." Now look at this. He created this entire situation, right, from choosing to marry this girl he didn't even know in hostile territory, for making a bet that he could not pay, even by giving the answer, he actually gave, kind of gave away what was going on. Yet he blames everyone involved in this situation except himself, that he somehow sees himself as the victim here. Sees no responsibility in his choices. So what he does is a Samson-scale solution. I'm going to burn everything. He literally goes around the town to every field, every orchard, every vineyard, burns everything. And this would have actually put the lives of the people in that town at risk, right? It wasn't like they could run down, down to the circle and market basket and grab some food, right? They were relying on those fields and orchards and vineyards to feed them. And that stuff's all gone. And so the Philistines are furious. Now again, they can't beat Samson. So what do? They blame the girl. And they kill her, and they kill her father. All because of Samson constantly wanting more, constantly convinced that he could handle it, never considering how his choices affected other people. And so what was the net result of Samson's decision? Right, Samson lost the girl, right? 30 strangers who had nothing to do with this lost their clothes, right? The woman and her father lost their life, and all the people in Timnah lost their food. Everybody except Samson lost everything. For Samson, he hasn't, you know, he's Samson, right? He was a bachelor before this started. He's a bachelor now. He was a great warrior before he started. He's a great warrior now. He creates all this havoc, and everyone else pays for it. Right? He impulsively makes a decision without regard for what it does to anyone else. Now, we might be, and I emphasize might, we might be tempted to want to defend Samson. Like, how could Samson possibly know all this was going to happen? Well, he had to know something was going to happen, right? When we make a decision, we expect something to happen. And we know that it's not just that one good thing. He knew the nature of the situation. He knew how much the Philistines hated him, right? He knew that this is a barbaric world where life is cheap. People kill each other all the time. And he made that decision anyway. And that's the thing that I want to encourage us to think about, that, you know, when we can deal with a particular situation, yeah, we can look at that result that we really want to have happen. But when you make a decision, you know, when you kind of smack, you know, a beehive, you expect something to happen. It's not just the honey's going to fall out, right? I mean, the honey will fall out, but something else is coming with it, right? But we walk around smacking beehives all the time. And so we want to step back, right? We want to think about our decisions. You know, and I understand that when we're younger, this is more prevalent than when we're older. But I haven't gotten smart yet, and I don't have a lot of hope for the future. Right? But we, you know, it's one of those that we all have these moments where we feel like, I just want that thing. I just want it, whatever it is. And then we begin to build this narrative where I have a reason to want it. You know, things are really good or things are really hard. You know, we can build any case we want to, and we tell ourselves, I deserve it. And then when someone starts to point out where it could go wrong, we're like, no, but I can handle it. Right? We all do that. Right? In the case of Samson, right, he keeps dancing near the edge, following his impulses, wreaking havoc in the world around him, and he keeps surviving until we learn one time, we'll talk about this next week, one day he doesn't survive anymore. And that same situation is true for all of us, right? That when we make decisions that we know are ill-advised, when people in our life that we trust try to point it out to us and we ignore them, not because we think they're wrong, it's because we're afraid they're right. When we do that, we're doing exactly what Samson does. And we're willing to have the people around us pay for it when we make that choice. So the kind of last thing I want to do then is kind of ask you four questions. What potentially dangerous situation are you considering right now? What's something that's going on in your life where you're going to hang it out and you're going to do something or not do something? And you know that it's got a big potential issue. And then even as you know that's the case, why is it so important to you? What is motivating you to consider that decision? Is it something healthy? Excuse me, is it something healthy? Or is it some pain from your past? Some baggage that you're carrying? Something you're trying to overcome? Something you're trying to prove? What is driving this willingness to consider a decision that you know is a bad one? Well, who in your life can you talk to about it? Who is there someone that you can trust and that you know and that you can talk to be honest with them and they will be honest with you? And then my last question. Why haven't you talked to him yet?